Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 308, How to Grow Your Architecture Firm and Break Through to the Next Level. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, ARCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more, all free at arcat.com. FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. And Gusto, easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses just like ours. Andy Goldstrom, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
At Midcourse Advisors, two-time Inc. 500 executive Andy Goldstrom and his team help companies grow profitably and do it fast. Andy is the firm's managing partner and is an expert at selling and operating in service-based businesses. Andy's primary background is in the commercial real estate industry, but he also has worked with startups and technology companies and nonprofits. Based on his background, he's sought after business partner and speaker. Andy has struggled, scaled, and successfully sold businesses that enabled him to develop a proprietary model called Business Offense to optimize business growth, which is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about growth. This has helped numerous businesses grow fast and avoid the pitfalls that can derail success. Andy is also a part-time instructor where he teaches entrepreneurship at Georgia State University. So Andy, I gave the audience a little tidbit about who you are, a little bit of the background of who you are, but I'd love to dive a little bit deeper. I'd love to go into your origin story and learn where you found the passion, where you were inspired to do what you do today, and share that story to where you find yourself at this moment.
Sure. Thanks for the introduction. And happy to dive into my background, which has kind of developed my passion. I originally from Connecticut, and I'm a state school guy. Went to the University of Connecticut, studied undergraduate. I was a computer science person and learning things like Fortran and COBOL and all those antiquated coding tools nowadays. But it and when I got through my undergraduate career, I didn't know what to apply it to. So I took a real estate course, a principles of real estate course, and really got hooked because it was tangible and something that I could apply my skills to. There were so many different aspects to the business, from architecture to appraisal to development to brokerage. And ever since, I've been somebody who's been in that field, basically driving growth either in service businesses or occupier businesses themselves. The first company that I was a part of that had significant growth, I became a partner in a company called USI. It was a fully integrated service-based business that modeled itself after Ross Perot's EDS business. It became an integrator of all services to a corporate occupier, from strategy to transactions, design and construction, legal lease review, and database management. So we had all of those under our belt. We grew to become an Inc. 500 company with some really cool clients like Delta Airlines and Computer Sciences Corporation and United Technologies, where we did all of their work nationally and put teams on site to do that work. We sold the business to Johnson Controls in 2005, and I became the Southeast leader for that integrated group. And the reason was we need facility management, and it was easier to be bought than to try and build that type of labor-intensive business. And they needed all the other aspects to help manage the life cycle of the real estate. I have since been the head of real estate globally for Deutsche Bank. We had 3,000 properties in 70 countries. So I got some global experience, which was very neat to be able to drive savings, drive industrialization, drive use of technology. And in the last 3 years, I opened my own shop, of which I'm the managing partner, called Midcourse Advisors. The whole idea of Midcourse is, if you're in the midcourse of your business life cycle, you tend to need to make adjustments to help propel you to where you want to go. And I've made in growing the businesses that I've had and in working with the customers that I've worked with more recently, I've been able to help companies and people avoid some of the mistakes that I've made and implemented some tools and methodologies to help them grow faster and more efficiently.
Yeah. And that's why you're here on this show, because a lot of architects, you know, there are a lot of architects who are listening who are startups and small firms that want to grow into, you know, mid-sized growing firms. And there are many listeners who are right in that position right now that have, you know, growing firms. They want to grow them into larger firms, and they're meeting some obstacles. They're hitting some walls, and they don't really know what to do. Maybe they're on a plateau. They just don't know how to get to the next level. And so it's great to have you here. I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. Before we get into that conversation, I want to just go back to an earlier point that you made in your origin story about going from computer science to real estate, and that you took a course and you fell in love with real estate. What was it about real estate that sort of lit you up, that there was something there that said, I don't want to do that anymore. Although that's my strength, I want to go in this direction and want to, you know, pursue this real estate career.
Yeah, real estate has always been a little bit behind the times when it comes to technological advancement. There's certainly been a lot more recently where there's been a lot of investment behind it for building utilization and brokerage and other uses, certainly architecture. But for the longest time, it hadn't been. So for me, not only was it a tangible way, it was a way for me to grow my business skills, because there were so many aspects to learn and do in business, but also become a leader, because I had the technology chops to be able to apply to an area that had a thirst for it, and was able to, you know, and I've always been somebody who's been interested in the technology and how it can apply to things. One of the things I'm really into now, frankly, and understanding now, is how, you know, how virtual reality and technology and 3D visualization are being used in the real estate workplace and architecture workplace to be able to drive a more efficient design and layout, going from concept to CDs. And the other part that's kind of really interesting that I'm involved with is data visualization. So if you're managing your firm, forgetting about the design part of it and how to design space is what important metrics do you need to really track and how do you visualize that in order to manage your firm more efficiently as you grow? And that's important whether you're, you know, a one or two person firm or, you know, 100-person firm. And the thing that I focus on mostly when it comes to, you know, growth, when it comes to things, is it's all about communication and structure. And so if you're a one person firm, you know, everything that's going on every day, you know, all the calls you're getting, you know, all the problems you have, you know, the finances. But when you get to three people or four people, you're not going to know everything. Some of the protocols change. And then when you get into 8 to 10 people, you need some systems and you need to be able to do things that are different as you continue to grow to that level and beyond that. And that's what business offense is all about, and helping firms get, you know, whatever their distinct levels psychologically, and studies have been done that show that there's certain breakpoints in which the level of the systems and the level of the communication protocols needs to change as you continue to grow.
When you started your first company, did you intend it to be a big, giant company that would be acquired by Johnson Technology? You know, that, not specifically Johnson, but was the intention from the beginning to grow a big company?
No. I was in my late 20s, and my goal, I had kind of an entrepreneurial itch. My first job before I went to graduate school was with GTE and their corporate real estate group. GTE is now Verizon. That's before I joined USI. And they went through a lot of change in their business with the economy at the time. And I saw that I wasn't in the core business, and I realized I wanted to be in a core business. I wanted to be challenged. I wanted to have an impact, and I wanted to have some variety and see where that led. And I wasn't targeting becoming Inc. 500. I wasn't targeting being part of a senior partner team that sold the business to Johnson Controls in 2005. I just wanted to learn and have an impact at that age and see where it took me to. Now, you know, I'm at a different point in my life. And once that occurred, frankly, I was like, okay, now I've made some money. I've sold the company. Now, what is it that I want to do, where I want to invest, and how do I look at my exit strategy for the next things that I'm doing in order to continue to have an impact, but also give back and also understand what that exit's going to look like if I want to build a sustainable firm.
Right. And so you've been through this a few times, but building these businesses and going through the stumbling blocks and, you know, having these obstacles like some of these architects might be doing today, building these
three times,
these companies.
Three times on my own. And then several times with obviously the ones I'm in a position to help now.
So what are some of the stumbling blocks that you discovered along the way when you started your firms? What were some of the issues that you experienced that today you can advise others to sort of guide them around those stumbling blocks?
Yeah, there are a number of stumbling blocks that people run into. Frankly, I have a list of 10 deadly sins of growing your company that I have formed into kind of a structure that is actually coming out as a book in the short term. And you can find more information about that on my website. But three of the things that I kind of focus on that people have issues with, whether they're architectural firms or others, but often architectural firms, is making sure you're identifying an appropriate problem that you're trying to solve. Are you just trying to design, you know, if you're saying we're great designers and we're great and creative and we know how to design great buildings and know everything about that, there are a lot of people who can do that. There are a lot of people with good backgrounds in architects. But, you know, if there's a firm that's in the business that actually understands that they want to pursue sustainability initiatives, they understand that that modular construction is an important big thing, that recyclability and speed and cost are important, and you can discern what that problem is and how they're going to address it, you will get you will segment your customer much better and find that audience more appropriately than trying to provide a solution. So you're actually solving a problem that a customer is looking for.
So is it easier to become successful in your business if you become an expert and you're viewed as an expert rather than being a generalist? That you're really good at a lot of things, or are you exceptional at one thing?
I have a friend and colleague whose name is Mike Ween, and he is he has a philosophy and a book out about being specific in everything you do. Great book. He's a great guy. The whole idea is, his quote that I always use is, you want to be so specific that it hurts. And what you need to do is, you know, you need to gauge what the size of your total addressable market may be and try and be a big fish in a small pond and then grow from there. Most successful businesses are like that. Now, in the introduction that you gave for me, you said I focus on real estate services businesses, but I deal with other services businesses as well. Right. And that's because they can apply to those things, but I don't position myself and market myself that way. So it doesn't exclude things. I think the reason people want to be generalists is they say, well, I'm going to be losing out on some business or some opportunities if I am that specific enough. And what I suggest is, be as specific as possible, become an expert with a point of view, be somebody who gets out there and shares that point of view, but do it solving a problem as opposed to talking about your solution.
Yeah, that's very interesting to focus on the problem. That's something that I think architects throughout the industry, until you get much larger firms where those larger firms are being run by and advised by professional business consultants. But the small firms and the medium-sized firms, so many of us want to be this generalist, right? We don't want to miss the opportunity of maybe that next great project, and they sort of are afraid to focus in on that expertise. It's a common theme here at Entree Architect Podcast about talking about target market, that you need to pick a specific target market and build your company and build your brand around one specific thing. Like Andy said, it's not necessarily that you have to push away everything else and only do that. It's just that that's what you want to be known for, so you can become this big fish in a small pond.
That's correct.
So
100%.
So identifying the problem, and identifying the problem rather than, you know, sort of talking more about your solution. So in terms of architecture and architects, what are some of the problems that we should be sort of, you know, as an example, what should, you know, maybe, you know, rather than saying, okay, I'm an architect of schools, right? That's sort of looking at the solution. What are some of the problems that we can become expertise in? Is that the right word?
Experts, not expertises. Yeah. Well, in real estate in general, people are either, and in business in general, people either look at an industry type or a property type or a geography. And being somebody who's an expert architect in an educational vertical is not a bad thing, because that's getting fairly specific and there's some fairly unique things about it. The things relating to terrorism and technology and other things relating to education that are unique and different than there would be in other buildings and other venues. So I wouldn't discount that. Mm-hmm. I think the key thing is, there are a lot of people who can build a school. You know, so what is it, or build an office building? So what is it that's important about the way people use space? And one of the things that I time and time again people don't know really how to solve how the workforce is changing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm at the very edge of the baby boomer cycle. But they're Gen Xers and Millennials and Generation Z and all those namesakes below that. And the people who are entering the workforce, 40% of the workforce is going to be millennials and Generation Z within the next couple of years, and they care about the impact they're going to make. They don't care about having a lifetime job. They want more work-life balance and the ability to have remote work. And ironically, if you're running a, if you're running a business and you're serving a customer, or you're running your own business, it makes it challenging because the market's tight, and it's harder to be deadline driven. You know, you used to be able to tell an employee, you know, I don't care what it takes, stay until 2 a.m. to get it done. There's a deadline, and people will, you know, and people nowadays will do that somewhat, but somewhat reject that because they've got other things in their life outside of work. Architecture is a very collaborative business in certain aspects of it. So this is counterintuitive because they would like to, you know, they want to be able to be on their own and be in their, you know, work out of their home offices and do whatever and be remote and have the flexibility. But things like conceptual design and schematic design really need to be collaborative efforts, because that's where the big thinking is, and you get different types of collaborative insights by working together and having backgrounds. When you get into design development and CDs and things are more task oriented, like designing the specific bathrooms or the stairwells in a building or an educational building, then it becomes a little bit more task oriented, where you can kind of do that thing on your own. So if you're running a business, that becomes, you know, more of a challenge. But I will tell you that that's not a challenge that's just native to the architecture industry. So if you make, if you can help make companies through their use of space, using that space as an asset to attract people and make them more productive, based upon your knowledge of the business and knowledge of that vertical, you're solving a huge problem, because people, you know, people are struggling with that, with the talent right now.
Yeah, and that's only going to get worse. That's a problem that if we don't address it at many different levels, that new workforce is going to, you know, come head on with the brick wall of the current way people do business. And so we all need to sort of adjust, and adjusting the spaces in which we work is a big piece of that problem that needs to be solved, and a great opportunity for architects.
Right. And, you know, there's an opportunity for architects to really adapt. I know that whole industry kind of shrunk with the Great Recession about 10 years ago.
Right.
And now is, you know, and now has bounced back and expanded, and, you know, but you can't be doing business the same way, especially if you want to be recession proof and you want to be resilient and you want to be able to retain your people and attract people and all the rest.
We will return to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors, RCAT, FreshBooks, and Gusto. If you work with specifications in your firm, you probably have come across outdated manufacturer specs with confusing notes, products that no longer exist, or even maybe even companies that no longer exist. Maybe you even pay for specifications. Stop right now. There's a better way to find manufacturer specifications for your project documentation. RCAT. RCAT.com. RCAT is the number one most used website for finding building product information, and has a free library of over 1,400 up-to-date accurate specifications written by FCSI, CCS, and AIA professionals based on manufacturers' data. Use RCAT's powerful search engine to find the right specifications for your project and quickly download them in multiple formats for free. That's right, RCAT is completely free. You don't even need to register. Just go to RCAT.com. That's A-R-C-A-T.com. RCAT.com. And start building better content today. Do you remember when you started your architecture firm? Well, maybe you're in the middle of that right now. Maybe you are in the middle of launching your architecture firm. It's not easy, is it? It takes lots of late nights, early mornings, and maybe even the occasional all-nighter. Well, we are crazy busy, so why not make things a little bit easier? Well, our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners like us. It's simple, intuitive, and keeps you way more organized than a dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. Create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds, and then get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. Yep, tax time's coming up. And the best part, FreshBooks grows alongside your business, so you'll always have the tools that you need when you need them, without ever having to learn the ins and the outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it for free. Free for 30 days, no catch, no credit card. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. To get started, visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. What do you think of when you hear the words payroll and benefits? Payroll and benefits. Does that make your skin crawl? Does it make your spine tingle? Payroll and benefits are hard. It's okay. It's hard, especially when you're a small business like us. You don't have time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations. A couple of more words that might make your skin crawl. And old school payroll providers just aren't built for the way that we're working today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does all the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service for your team. To help support the show, the Entree Architect podcast, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive deal. Sign up today and you'll get 3 months free. Once you run your first payroll, just go to entrearchitect.com/gusto to claim your free 3 months of payroll processing. That's entrearchitect.com/gusto for 3 months free. Arcat, FreshBooks, and Gusto. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So the first deadly sin that you were talking about is to identify a problem, to make sure that you're solving a problem in what you do and become an expert in that problem solving. What's another one?
Sure. We spent a good amount of time on that. Love to share another one. Another one is gaining attention and traction. So it's, you know, there are a lot of companies out there that do good work. But they've developed good relationships over the years, but there's new ways to gain attention and traction. There are new ways to price your services. There are new ways to do a discovery offer in terms of how you do your work. With social media and things like this podcast and their blogs, there are new ways to create content and make yourself known so that your reach is broader. And you have an ability to gain traction with new and different clients to keep that pipeline full. So people who make the mistake thinking, you know, I've got a great solution. I've got this new app or I've got this new firm where I've put my shingle at and we're going to design great spaces and people are just going to come to us because we're just so great. They're going to find that it being a little bit of an uphill battle. And so I try and help companies avoid those kinds of mistakes.
Yeah, traditionally architects in the past, although it's starting to shift now, but in the past, you know, the mindset was design great work and you'll get more great work, right? You didn't have to do anything else. And there was actually a time in the profession where it was against the rules and it was against the etiquette. It was beneath us to market ourselves and to make ourselves known through advertising or marketing. And that has shifted, you know, that's now it's clear that we need to build businesses and we need to do marketing and we need to build brands and we need to gain attention through the tools that we have in social media. And that's shifting too. The way that people are paying attention is different. Just think about in the last 10 years, how our focus has gone from television to the internet and how, you know, advertising on billboards and in magazines really ineffective today, whereas social media and being in front of the eyeballs of the people who are staring at their phone 20 hours a day is where you need to be. You need to be in those places where people are looking for what you do and who you are, and become a major part of their daily experience.
Right. And if you don't, you know, if you and your architecture company or design company don't do it, you're going to be left behind because others do. And one of the things that, one of the reasons I teach at Georgia State is to give back a little bit, to inspire, but to also learn from a younger generation. And one of the things I've seen in talking in the real estate groups at the school and the architecture groups is that there's a dramatic shift in the interest of architecture students. So they're not just looking at the standard platforms or obligations and rewards of a traditional practice, and they take courses outside of architectural school, going to business school, earning MBAs, earning their masters of architecture. So they have a, you know, they absorb information differently than we did 10 years ago. Their interests are different. They're going to be either your employees or your consumers of space or your developers or people that you're going to be working with go forward. So you might as well talk to them on the and interact with them on the same playing field, and learn specific tools to differentiate yourself, to gain that attention and traction in whatever you're doing. And so when I work with companies, it's what can we do better to gain attention and traction in what you're doing? Or if you're looking to grow in one area and implement a new service or product, what is it that you can do to minimize the risk and maximize the return, given that resources and money are finite?
What's the difference between gaining attraction and having, gaining attention and having traction? What's the difference between attraction and attention? No, that's not the word. Attention and traction. Sorry.
There's a very big difference. Attention is eyeballs. Traction is actually opportunity. Got right. It. And so it's translating from one to the other. There's something called a law of diffusion of innovation. So when somebody brings out a new product, you get early innovators or early users who are interested in using your product or service, and they help you get started and provide you some feedback, but you need to get to a traction level above, you know, around, the studies have shown, like between 15% and 18% in order to be sustainable. And that's why your market has to be defined well enough, and the traction you get with people who are actually buying your product or service. A good example is like when Apple introduces a new phone, they don't have to worry very much about getting that 15 to 18% market share for that type of new phone that's being introduced. And so they can overcome that barrier to gain momentum and be stable right away, because they have those lead users who always want the new technology. When you're doing something, when you're introducing a new product or service, you want to be able to have the same kind of thought about how do I get that attention to develop that traction to make that business sustainable.
Right. So it's, once you gain that attention, what do you do with that attention in order to move your company forward, which is the traction, right? So you're gaining attention, you're gaining eyeballs, you're gaining potential opportunities. Now, what do you do with all that attention and opportunity? Right. Well, that's the traction part. Right.
It translates into the business, you know, that you're validating and wanting to grow.
Yeah. So what's another one? We have two down. Let's do one more before we wrap
things up. One more is just developing the right partnerships. So if you have, if you team with others where there's a win-win, you know, you work with a developer who, you know, builds office buildings or industrial buildings, and you happen to have a niche in that, and you're geographically proximate, you can complement each other and be a service provider or otherwise, and they can provide you more, you know, more business as a result of it. Or if it's, you know, a company that multiple companies that work with developers in that business, where you would, you know, like a legal firm where, or an accounting firm where actually, you know, they focus on the real estate business and you can team up with them and provide, you know, make introductions and provide mutual opportunity for each other. Those extend your reach. They're really important to be able to do. They're very hard to do right. And the reason they're hard to do right is because you're introducing a new firm to an existing sales team that has goals and objectives for the thing that they're most comfortable selling. And so I've worked with some firms that had a bunch of suppliers and middlemen, but there was no meat on the bone in terms of training, in terms of incentives, in terms of how to go to market. And so if it's done well, it can make a huge difference for your firm, no matter how big or small you are, and certainly mitigate that risk as you're growing.
How do you identify the right partners? Because, I mean, our audience, small firms, sole practitioners, we're doing everything, right? So our time is already maximized in terms of capacity. Now, I wanted to leverage this, and I want to build some strategic partnerships and understand, you know, find some partners that can take me to the next level. How do I identify the right partners so I'm not wasting my time with the wrong ones?
It's really good blocking and tackling, frankly. It's not looking people up on LinkedIn and seeing if they're a fit. First, I think you need to know where your target market is and where your business is heading. And if you identify that properly, you know where the gaps are, where you can actually leverage others to try and get to where you want to go. Then when you go to those industry conferences or you talk to the relationships you have, or you do the research online, you look for those types of firms in that space. And then you see who can connect you if you're not already connected to those types of firms to kind of establish that relationship. And then you don't go all in, you pilot something, you figure out how to work on something together that will bring mutual benefit. Because there needs to be a cultural alignment too. If one company's really laid back and one company's really hard charging, if one company's really data driven and another company isn't, you know, chances are it might not be as good a fit. So the products and services have to be complementary. The education and incentives have to be complementary. The culture has to be complementary. But when it works, it makes a huge difference because it can extend your reach much further.
Faster. Yeah, that's very interesting. If you do the work on the first two that you said, that the identifying the problem and becoming an expert in part of your market, and then gaining the attention and traction that you need to build the business and to attract the right work, those partnerships may just fall into place because now you have a clear definition of who you are and what your brand is, and you've did the work to find the right clients and have the right systems in place to have that traction, you know, turn into business. So when you're identifying your partners now, because you've done that other work, the idea of who is the right partner will become much more clear. If you don't do that pre-work, if you don't do those first two steps, that third step becomes much more complicated.
So true. So true.
We could go on forever with this. You have 10 deadly sins of growing your company. The book's coming out soon. So once it comes out, let us know and we will let the community know that it's out and we'll help spread the word about it.
It'll be out next month in February, and I have a link on my website.
Excellent. Excellent. The website is midcourseadvisors.com. We'll have a link on the show notes for that. Andy, before we wrap things up here, I want to ask you the one question that I ask everybody. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Sure. We didn't talk about business offense. So I thought, you know, that's kind of one of the keys to what I deliver for clients that are helping to grow. And so some of the key tenets of business offense are what I suggest to folks. Most businesses are very reactionary. Whatever comes in, whatever they need to address, they've got, you know, ongoing work in process. They're trying to manage, you know, their cash flow or their delivery or their team. What I've seen is a big inhibitor to growth is people who are trying to grow their one person firm or two person firms or 10 person firms. They try and do everything. And it takes them away from being good at doing any one thing. And so my business offense system focuses on two key tenets of leadership. One is predicting the future, and the second one is leveraging others. So if you have a leader who can think vision as a visionary, what you want them to be able to do once their business is somewhat stable is be able to focus on the vision and the strategy of the company and meet with key. So that's, you know, what do you want to be externally? What's your brand look like? How are you going to grow in the next 5 years? If you have an exit strategy, what is that going to look like? And be able to work on key projects, meet with key customers, but stay out of the weeds. In order to be able to do that at some point, you need to leverage others. So when you leverage others, you're focusing on operations and delegation. So from an operations standpoint, there's the Pareto principle. What is it that you can, you know, what is it that's task-oriented that you can replicate, that you can actually industrialize so that the same work can be done in a consistent way that you have confidence in and the quality, and what systems can be put in place? I've done a lot of that in my career to help grow companies, is put those systems in place. And then making sure that you have the right butts in the seats to delegate, that they're trained and that they're incentivized properly and that they have development plans, and that you can, if you're focusing on QuickBooks, or you're focusing on, answering customer calls or managing the website, and as opposed to working on where your business is going, it's going to restrain you from growing as fast as you can. So I have all the tools and tried to keep it simple in terms of business offense, but it allows you to focus on the right things to grow your business. And so the question is what can companies do? It's install some of those principles, implement some of those principles, whether you talk to me or not, you know, try to bring yourself above the day to day at some point once your business is established, and then focus, you know, and focus on the things that are really going to move the needle and drive the business forward, so your business is sustainable and can continue to grow while having the systems in place to be able to manage the day to day confidently.
You may be one of those architects that are sort of struggling with growth, getting it to the next level. Sort of you've hit this plateau and you just don't know how to get it to the next level. Andy is exactly the type of person that you need to talk to, whether you're talking to Andy or you're talking to somebody similar to what Andy does. That's what you need to do. You need to talk to somebody who's been through the process, understands how businesses grow. They've done it before themselves. They've built some of these strategies like Andy's business offense. You know, he knows how to do it. So if you're interested in learning more about Andy, midcourseadvisors.com is the website. You could just let him know that Entree Architect sent you, and he'll spend some time with you to sort of understand what your business is about and how and if he's the right guy to help you get to the next level. So, Andy, this has been a really great conversation. I appreciate you spending some time here with us and sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great discussion.
You've been listening to episode 308. If you'd like to access the show notes or share a link to this episode, which I would really love for you to do, the link is entrearchitect.com/episode308. If you found value in this and you want to share it with a friend, please share a link to entrearchitect.com/episode308. Do you own or are you a partner in a larger, small firm? It's still a small firm. That's our community, small firms. And it's not a large firm. It's somewhere in the middle. It's a not-so-small firm, we call them, not-so-small firm. It's a firm with some growth and some experience, a firm with a few employees, and you want to grow to the next level, but you sort of hit this plateau, right? Owners of larger, small firms have different goals and different priorities than sole practitioners and smaller firm owners. It took much effort and determination and financial sacrifice to reach the level of growth that you have achieved, and now you're trying to move your firm to the next level. You recognize and understand that the strategies that helped you to achieve your current success won't get you to the next step. It won't get you to the firm that you have planned for the future. What you've done in the past is not going to get you to where you want to go. You need to do something different. You need support, you need guidance, and you need to collaborate and share with other architect business owners who are passionate about growth and financial success, just as passionate as you are. Leaders who understand that with that sustainable growth and that financial abundance, you will acquire the capacity to build a better world, right? To serve the world better. As an architect, the more money you make, the more you earn, the more you can give back to the world, the better you can serve the world as an architect. That is why we developed a powerful new program exclusively for experienced architecture firm owners. It's an advanced peer advisory group. It's called Entree Architect Leadership Council. And you can learn more right now at entrearchitect.com/leaders. entrearchitect.com/leaders. If you're interested, go there right now because the application is going to close very soon. So if you're interested in Entree Architect Leadership Council, go there now. entrearchitect.com/leaders. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening, my friends. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.